7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I am Brian Edwards-Tiegert. We're going to start, as we do most Mondays, with our friend and colleague Mitch Jeserich. He's the host of Letters in Politics, which airs weekdays at 10 a.m. on KPFA. Also former Capitol correspondent for this network and our guide to the machinations of the center of political power in this country. Good morning, Mitch.
Morning, Brian.
So we have a timeline on the impeachment trial in the Senate. According to the person newly in charge of a highly precarious majority in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, proceedings are going to start the week of February 8th. What do we know about what they're going to look like?
I think it'll look a lot like it did just a year ago when we had a trial for Donald Trump in last January after he was impeached by the House of Representatives. The trial will officially begin on February 9th. Tonight, the House of Representatives will march across the Capitol, the pieces of paper that the article of impeachment is actually on, and deliver it to the Senate. But both Chuck Schumer, who's now the Senate Majority Leader, and Mitch McConnell, who is now the Minority Leader, have come to an agreement not to begin immediately the impeachment trial, but to wait until February 9th, which allows for a few things. For Mitch McConnell on the Republican side, especially for those who oppose impeaching or indicting the president, it allows the president's team to take a couple of weeks to get on his feet, his defense team in the Senate trial. And then for Democrats, and in particular for the new Biden administration, it allows for a couple of weeks to try to confirm more members of the administration. Again, when Joe Biden took office last week, Brian, he was the first president, at least in modern history, who hadn't had any of his cabinet officials confirmed by the Senate. Now, if you have been confirmed, and we do anticipate quite a number more being confirmed both this week and next week, progressive groups, by the way, are gearing up to try to oppose the nomination of Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Agriculture, saying that he is just too tight with the big ag industry. And it also gives them a couple of weeks to see if they can get the COVID economic relief package passed through the Senate as well. And then on February 9th, tomorrow, they will swear in all 100 senators as jurors. But again, the trial won't really begin in earnest until February 9th. Once that happens, again, it'll look a lot like it did a year ago. The Senate, steeped in its traditions, has traditionally gone from the playbook that was used for the first presidential impeachment back in 1868 with Andrew Johnson. Democrats are saying they don't intend for this trial to last as long as the last year's trial lasted, which went 21 days, this time pointing that the case is much simpler. It's about inciting a riot or an uprising at the Capitol on January 6th. And so they say it's going to be much more of a straightforward case. It shouldn't take nearly as long. I think they're hoping that it would take a week, but you know, that might be aspirational, but we'll see. So in 2 weeks, we will begin. And I think it's going to be interesting, Brian. I was just thinking about this last night. I think one way to look at this is going to be the first time that you're going to have a former president, once leaving office, basically being put on trial. Now, it's not going to be a trial that could end the former president up in jail or even any harsh penalties, other than he'll lose some of the perks that former presidents have and he wouldn't be allowed to run for federal office again. But I think symbolically, this could be seen as a trial of one of the most controversial, probably the most controversial president in U.S. history. So I think symbolically it'll hold a lot for the public when it occurs.
Now, when we say trial, is he going to take the stand?
I mean, it's possible. I don't know if he's going to take the stand or not. I don't think, I would doubt it, but there's nothing that would prohibit that from occurring.
I mean, I guess he wouldn't take the stand if he didn't want to. Is the Senate going to call witnesses? Like, is there going to be a lot of entering evidence into the record, do we think? Or is this basically going to be like, hey, we all saw what happened. Now we just have to argue about whether or not the president was responsible.
Again, we don't know the game plan. It hasn't been laid out yet. But I'm pretty sure there will be witnesses. I'm pretty sure there will be accounts of what occurred. I'm sure that they will insert evidence. I mean, it'll be just a year ago that there was a lot of angry consternation from Democrats directed at Mitch McConnell for not being willing to allow more witnesses in last year's trial. So, you know, I would be surprised if they didn't take witnesses in this trial. But who knows? We don't know yet. They haven't laid out the game plan of what is going to occur. But I do think this is also an opportunity. You know, maybe in the future there will be a creation of some kind of commission to investigate and get into the real story of what happened on January 6th. But short of that, this may be the one real airing that we have, fact-finding sort of mission in which two sides will be able to argue what happened on January 6th and what were the events that led to the attack on the Capitol building. So I suspect that they will take it seriously. I suspect it'll be taken a little, you know, it won't be quite the rush. Again, it may be shorter than the 21 days that happened last year, but last year's case was pretty complex. This one seems to be a little more straightforward. At least that's what Democrats are arguing. I don't know if it actually is or not. But I do think this is going to be an opportunity to sort of try to reconcile all the events that happened on January 6th and the events that led up to it. So I do think it'll be a serious proceeding and not just, you know, in a couple of days we're going to convict, kind of the way they did with impeaching him in the House of Representatives.
They're, of course, a much lower threshold. They just needed the slimmest of majorities in the House. In the Senate, they'll need 2/3. That would mean 17 Republicans crossing party lines. Pretty much inconceivable unless Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell kind of sticks his neck out first and brings some of his co-partisans along with him. He's been pretty cagey about where he lands.
Well, everything that we have heard about Mitch McConnell and the Trump Senate trial is based on reports from people on the anonymous sources from the inside who said this is what Mitch McConnell is saying in private. So he hasn't really said anything in public other than to say that the president does have some responsibility for what happened on January 6th. He did say that on the Senate floor last week. On one hand, it's been reported that Mitch McConnell would like to move the Republican Party away from Donald Trump. I've always felt in these last 4 years, even though Mitch McConnell knows how to wield power, and I think he used Trump for everything that he could get, I never felt that Mitch McConnell actually liked Donald Trump or liked what he was doing to the party. So I think on one hand, Mitch McConnell would like very much to be able to distance the Republican Party from Donald Trump. One way of doing that would be to convict him in a Senate trial, thus prohibiting the president from being able to say run for president again in 4 years. That would, you know, if he has the kind of support that he has had up to now over these last, you know, in more recent time, would still make him a very powerful, maybe the most powerful force within the Republican Party. But on the other hand, there's also a move from congressional Republicans against not only just convicting the president in a Senate trial, but even holding a trial altogether. There will be an attempt in the Senate, we believe, by Republicans to dismiss the trial at hand, right at the get-go, right at the very beginning of the process. And then if you look at what's happening in the House of Representatives, you can kind of get the sense of largely what's happening within the Republican Party. There is a growing effort within House Republican caucus to oust Liz Cheney from her leadership position. She's the third top Republican in Congress. Of course, she's the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. She was one of 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And there is a growing effort that's so far being opposed by House Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, but there is this growing effort to try to oust her from her leadership position. So there is a strong current on the other side that you can, you know, interpret as being still very pro-Trump, very connected to the politics of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think it's worth kind of laying out what the political incentives are operating on people here. Like for Republicans, particularly for Republicans in gerrymandered districts, the only real political threat they face is a primary challenge. That's particularly true in the House, right? So a lot of them look over their right shoulder, so to speak, when they're thinking about where to position themselves. It's a little bit different in the Senate. And also, according to reporting in several outlets, I think probably the most comprehensive was what Jane Mayer wrote up for The New Yorker, McConnell was specifically concerned because he was facing a rebellion by corporate donors to Republicans. And that's not just a concern because his party would lose the actual money, but because a lot of his internal control of the party caucus comes from his ability to kind of route donations from big donors to other members of the Republican Party. So if that dries up, not only does the party lose some of its political money, which is important, but he loses his internal power within the party. And so basically you have like the corporate wing of the Republican Party at odds with the grassroots base for Trumpism. It's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out during an actual impeachment proceeding.
And also really interesting to see how it shakes out a little under 2 years from now in the midterm elections of 2022. I mean, in some ways, it makes me think about the midterm elections of 2010, and which 2010 is the year that the Republicans recapture the majority in the House of Representatives. But in those midterm elections is when we have the rise of the political force, really, of the Tea Party and the election and incumbents, Republican incumbents, losing in the primaries and losing to people on their right, people that, you know, largely we would see as inevitably leading the down the road to supporting the politics of somebody like Donald Trump. So what happens in the primaries, you know, again, a little under 2 years from now, I think will be something I think is what we'll see what direction for sure the Republican Party is going in. And look, you could be open to the fact that 2 years from now, if the incumbents who support either impeachment, and I don't know how many Republicans actually are going to support indicting the president in a Senate trial right now, Brian, for some of the reasons that we're talking about right now. It is a precarious position to be in. There were only 10 Republicans out of 435 overall members, some 200 Republicans in general. There was only 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And you're right, the Senate is different. You're not in a gerrymandered district. You represent an entire state. But I think it's a long shot that Republicans are that the Senate in general is going to indict Donald Trump. You are right to point out that Mitch McConnell, from reports that we have seen, may, in his own heart, may support indicting the president, but I'm not convinced. In fact, I'm quite doubtful that there are 17 additional Republicans that would join Mitch McConnell. And I'm pretty sure if Mitch McConnell does not have the votes, or even maybe a majority of his own caucus, because if you get 17 Republicans, that still means you have 33 Republicans who voted against indicting the president. I'm not sure Mitch McConnell, somebody who probably understands power as well as anyone in this century, I'm pretty sure that he would only move forward in voting for indicting the president if he knew he had a majority of his caucus, hence the ability to be able to, sort of maintain that power. But if he's in the minority and he moves forward in indicting a president that the vast majority of his party opposes indicting, then I think he's sacrificing his leadership position.
Meanwhile, the way he is exercising power is kind of subtle and not terribly visible to us. But he's in kind of a standoff with Chuck Schumer and the Democrats over what rules the Senate's going to operate under in the session to come. Can you kind of like walk us through what the sticking points are and why that's gumming everything up?
Well, just in case, Brian, if you were wondering if the Senate would operate a little more smoothly now under new leadership, I can assure you it is not. Everything has been stalled at this minute because they can't even come to an agreement over their operating procedures of how the Senate will run in a 50-50 tie. And I think it's important to point out at the get-go here that only a handful of times in history has the Senate actually been tied 50-50. I think only three other times before now, and only one really in the modern era, and that would be in 2001. And in 2001, Tom Daschle, who was the Democratic leader at the time, and Trent Lott, who was a Republican leader at the time, came to an agreement of how they would operate the Senate. And that agreement is the exact agreement that Chuck Schumer, the Democratic majority leader now, is bringing and saying that this is how we should operate. We should do the same thing that they did in 2001. And what that agreement said was that basically every committee, I mean, this is the important part of the agreement, says a lot more, but every committee is going to be tied, you know, is going to have the same number of Republicans and Democrats on it. So what do you do if a measure is, you know, if a vote on a bill is tied? Well, usually if it's tied, it could mean that the bill dies in committee. But what the rules from 2001 said, and these were the rules that Chuck Schumer is pushing, is that if it's a tie, it can still move to the Senate floor so that the whole Senate can still consider the measure. Obviously, with the tie-breaking vote of Kamala Harris as vice president, Democrats very much would like these rules to be followed once again. Republicans would love for a tie to be able to stop any legislative activity by Democrats in committee if they could. But that's not actually what the sticking point is in trying to get to an agreement on how to operate the committee. The big sticking point is recognizing Democrats want these rule changes because without them, they're operating from the previous rules. And previous rules, basically, as I was indicating, will say that a tie vote in a committee means that the bill is not passed through. So recognizing Democrats have a lot in stake for these new rules, Mitch McConnell is trying to ensure that Democrats do not eliminate the filibuster. And of course, the irony is deep there. Mitch McConnell is the one who eliminated the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees and also cabinet nominations. But now in the minority, he wants to make sure for at least legislation that the filibuster is still intact. And this is something that Chuck Schumer is not willing to agree to. Chuck Schumer says we've never agreed in Senate rules to protect the filibuster. The filibuster is just sort of this matter of fact. You know, there's not even we call it a filibuster, but what it really is a senator taking to the floor of the Senate and refusing to give up the floor, basically stopping all other activity. That's what we call filibustering. And Mitch McConnell wants to make sure that stays there so they can stop any of the legislation that moves through. So, until they reach some kind of an agreement, Brian, concerning these rules, everything in committees kind of stops. And the reason being is even though the Democrats have a majority with Kamala Harris being the tiebreaker, until they adopt new rules, they're unable to assign new senators to committees. Hence, the committees, unless the senators are no longer in the Senate anymore from the previous session, are still the previous makeup, which means at this moment, even though you have Chuck Schumer as majority leader, the majority of Senate committees right now are still being chaired by Republicans. Here we are at the beginning. We're already in a huge standoff that is making it impossible for the Senate to really accomplish a lot of work, even though it is now confirming nominations for the Biden administration.
Right, and worth pointing out that, you know, because the Democratic caucus is not necessarily solid, right? The 50th vote in the Democratic caucus is Joe Manchin from West Virginia, this heavily Republican, heavily Trump state. He has strong ties to fossil fuel interests, and he's expressed opposition to getting rid of the filibuster. I mean, Schumer's not necessarily going into those negotiations with a strong hand to play, if his majority includes a couple wobblers like Manchin.
Well, it depends, right? Joe Manchin is not alone, opposes undoing the filibuster. There's several moderate Democrats. Angus Kane, who's actually an independent but caucuses with a Democrat, would be another one, who like to see this 50-50 tie and the threat of a filibuster as a way of forcing more bipartisan legislation. So even if you're a Democrat, but you know your style of politics matches up kind of with the previous era of politics that was practiced in Washington, D.C., and you want to see more bipartisan agreements, you would still want the filibuster to be there. But I don't know if Joe Manchin, and this is getting kind of technical, necessarily supports putting in the rule languages support of the filibuster, because this is something affirming the ability to be able to use a filibuster has never been actually put in the rules itself. And so I'm not sure he would support that.
And I guess it would take away the club of being able to implicitly threaten the filibuster if Republicans went full bore obstructionist. All right. Mitch Jesrich, we're going to leave it there. Good to hear from you again, brother.
I'm still alive, Brian. Thank you.